my pleasure to introduce Najwa Araj. She's a Senior Vice President, Special Projects, Data Matter, and Dark Matter, sorry. Dr. Najwa Araj, Senior Vice President of Special Projects on Dark Matter, and Dark Matter is responsible for evaluating and customizing secure product architecture, for evaluating, designing, and setting up special projects related to authentication and cryptology systems. And also for overseeing the development and operations of Dark Matter's test and validation labs. So, welcome. In addition to this, with a PhD in computer engineering from Princeton University and more than 10 years of experience working with global firms such as Bosenco, NEC Labs, IBM Security Research Labs, and Intel, Najwa brings extensive practical knowledge of cybersecurity implementations in the US, Australia, the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. So she has a great credential, and it's definitely my pleasure to welcome her. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. It's good to see a full house, actually. So as Nitya said, this is a keynote speech. So basically, I'm going to keep it high level, but please feel free to interrupt me at any point for questions, and I'll keep like 5 to 10 minutes. Yes.
Can you hear everyone?
I think it's on.
Yeah,
fine, great, as long as you hear me. So, and I'm going to keep like 5 to 10 minutes at the end for any questions you may have. So the talk today is focused on modern crypto systems and practical attacks, the way that we see crypto systems being implemented in various... Yes?
Can you just be closer to the mic?
Yes, sure. Better now?
There you go.
Okay.
And also, we're trying to get if people can maybe move in and fill in any seats, there's a lot of people sitting in the back. So if you move into the system, is there any available seats that would be acceptable? Thank you so much. Sorry about that.
No issue. So let me start. So there is no doubt that computing systems have evolved over the past 30, 40 years. So when we were talking about mainframes in the 1970s, desktops and internet in the 1990s, today we are talking about basically computing systems being ubiquitous in our daily life. So whether we are an end user, whether we are businesses, whether we are highly sensitive government entities, computing devices are basically a main component of our daily life. This is the case across many industries. This is the case across many verticals, across the critical infrastructure as we know it today. This increased computations, functionality, connectivity, etc., doesn't come as a cheap price. So the type of attacks and the number of attacks have increased, of course. We hear about billions of attacks that is hitting on a yearly basis, million new threats that are hitting on a yearly basis. And what is very interesting about it is that the type of attacks are different from what we used to see in the previous years. So today, for example, while we used to talk before about simple unstructured attacks, where the attack would come from a single connected user, basically to cause a minor disruption to a system, to cause a small scale of theft and fraud, like basically sending a malware to disrupt a single user. Today we are talking about what we call the complex and coordinated attacks. Basically, attacks that are targeting heads of state, attacks that are targeting government leaders, which require very high level of expertise and basically which require also very high level of concentrated efforts to disrupt services of critical infrastructure, to disrupt, to cause large-scale theft and fraud in case of financial institutions and other, and destroy information, and then ultimately also to create some sort of terror and terrorism as well. Having said that, given the number of attacks and the sophistication of attacks, today cybersecurity and protecting against cyber attacks is top mind of more than 65% IT professionals and technology professionals. And Dark Matter, one of those companies that is focused on technology, cybersecurity, and research, is focusing on the particular areas that matter in the field. So one, we have a strong focus on cryptographic protocols, how to make them robust, how to make them efficient. Second, we have an expert team that does research in cryptography and cryptographic implementations, key management and TPMs, or trusted platform research, trusted platform modules. We do go into operating system security research and then basically put together frameworks for secure communication and encryption. So the ultimate aim basically is to have secure and authenticated communication channels that are integrated in products, that are integrated in like any products that we deliver or that we can advise third parties, to secure data at rest and secure data in transit, to have hardened and secure operating systems and like the whole complete software stack security and hardware security. So in this slide, what I'm trying to capture basically is the different areas of the different areas that we focus when we are trying to secure a device or secure a communication device end to end. So as you can see on the top left, we have the communication security. So the first question that comes to mind basically is how do I transmit my voice, my SMS, my data, my chat over a secure channel? What is this end-to-end security protocol that I implement between the two end devices, between the device and the server, and all the different endpoints in a security system that ensure the confidentiality, integrity of the data that is transmitted? The second one is, as I mentioned, what is this cryptographic algorithms that we need to put together? How does the crypto implementation, how should this crypto implementation be like on the system? How do I divide my implementation between software and hardware to have a solid implementation that is resistant to side channel attacks? How do I manage my keys? How do I route them into hardware and software, etc.? And how do I make sure that I have the right entropy and the right entropy management modules in the on my platform? So this is from the side of communication security and protecting the data in transit. The second point comes where, on the same system, protecting the security at the communication layer is not enough. So obviously, if you have an infected or basically a kernel or a or an operating system or the underlying hardware level that can be attacked, the communication security will not be enough. So the second area basically is looking into the operating system, what are the areas to harden it, and then doing the security extensions. Whether this means that I'm going to do SE Linux extensions to my operating system, I'm going to randomize the memory, the instructions, etc. into my operating system. So what are the different areas that I can look at today in the OS at the kernel in order to harden it? Integrity monitor. And this goes hand in hand also with the secure boot. So today in such platforms, basically, when we go into the OEM, secure boot is one main point that we need to look for. So if I can fuse my own certificate on the chip and then basically implement the secure boot and then ensure that I'm monitoring the integrity of the whole software stack, starting from the boot at the boot loader and then going up, this means that also this is an extra layer that I have in order to harden my OS and my kernel. Then we have the memory management unit security, and then finally, after we speak about the encryption of the data in transit, the encryption of data at rest is also one important point to look at when we are designing secure products and secure communication products. The second part, which also like many times people overlook, is we have the end device, we have the solution where we have put all these security measures. However, we often, more often than not, we overlook the back end components and infrastructure components. So it's very important when we are looking into the management of those devices to have a very solid management backend. So how do I do my device management? How do I configure those security solutions in a device? How do I do over-the-air security configurations, whether integrity monitoring, whether auditing, whether over-the-air activation or deactivation? And then finally, how do I manage the policies on this device? And the last point is, which, you know, it's an obvious thing for many of you, I'm sure, but then also it can be overlooked, is where these solutions reside, whether it's on-premise, on the cloud, etc., we need to take care, or we need to make sure that the infrastructure is secure as well. So I will skim very quickly through this. So as I mentioned, basically the first part will be the secure communication or the secure protocol layer. So be it the authentication where you will have to use the asymmetric crypto system, symmetric crypto system, and the hashing, the all the other components where we have to make sure that our key management and the random number generation on the platform is the right ones that are there. But putting those together is not as easy as it sounds. It's not about having the right, or it's not about having an asymmetric crypto system that I put together, or it's not about having the symmetric crypto system that I put together. There is the main value in this is, one, how do I design this protocol in order to have a provable security properties of that protocol? How do I make sure that all the properties I need are there? So be it anonymity, non-repudiation, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. So how do I link all these components together in order to come up with the right properties of the systems? Obviously, when we put a protocol together, we have to look out for making sure the properties is there, that are there. We need to make sure that also the bit level security of the system is there. And then this is how the mishmash the different components. So the same way as I mentioned before, the same way that the communication security, the protocol design and the protocol implementation is important, so are the kernel and the hardware level security components. So how do I protect my data at rest? What are the algorithms that I need to implement? How do I manage my keys on the platform? What is the software-hardware co-design balance that I need to put there? What are the outside components that I need to integrate? How do I actually route the root of trust of my device into hardware? And then finally, how do I take all these components of the OS and the kernel in order to harden them? So far, basically, what I covered is what are the different design considerations when we are developing and then designing a secure communication solution. The second part is basically I would like to focus on what are the challenges while implementing most of those components, and mainly focusing on the challenges that crypto and the crypto implementation poses for developing and then implementing those crypto solution, for the communication solutions. So one, we have the side where the algorithm itself, or the math behind the algorithm itself should be intractable. So it should be resistant to any theoretical cryptanalysis technique. The second part, which is more often than not, which is actually the harder to achieve, which is the implementation. So how can I make sure that the way I implement my crypto is safe, and that is not basically, and that is resistant to any type of cryptanalysis, practical cryptanalysis that can face the system. And in particular, I would like to focus on the side channel attacks, basically which, you know, they leverage, or they basically attack leakages from different components of the system in order to get this key, where, you know, by Kirchhoff law, we know that the key is the main part of a crypto system. So once I reveal the key, or once I reveal the secret, basically my crypto or my crypto system is broken. So this is an example of a side channel attack on a system. This signal basically that you use is a signal that we got based on, you know, we were doing a simple power analysis technique. So before getting into the left side, so when we say side channel attacks, there are different ways to do a side channel attacks. The most common ones is power analysis. Basically, the power analysis, they are based on the properties of circuits or the underlying circuitry in a system, which basically leads to consuming different amounts of power based on the operations and the data that the input data. For example, if you look at the left-hand side, this signal is taken from a scalar multiplication operation that is happening in ECDSA sign. So in this scalar multiplication, we were using the double and add algorithm. So you can see that you have almost repeating patterns. Unfortunately, I don't have a pointer, but you can see at the top you have like different the repeating patterns where you see that the energy consumption or the power consumption between the first curve and the second is different. And this is basically a property of the scalar multiplication, is that if you have a bit of the key that is zero, you do a double and add, and if you have it as zero, you do a double operation. And then basically the power consumption is different between one and the other. This is in the case of elliptic curve cryptography and scalar multiplication. The same thing you can see, for example, with an RSA implementation of the Chinese remainder theorem, where also when you have a bit of one, you have a square and multiply, and then when you have a bit of zero, you have basically a square operation. So if you have, this example is taken from a smart card, which was implementing ECDSA sign without any countermeasures that are added in the scalar multiplication. So if your implementation doesn't have those SPA and DPA countermeasures, by collecting traces while the operation is happening, basically you can do the analysis either like through observation of the power or the time, or you can correlate the different traces that you get in order to extract the key. So this is power analysis, and then on the left you can see an example. Other types of side channel attacks are basically they leverage electromagnetic, so basically EM-based side channel attacks. You leverage electromagnetic emissions and signals where basically like you extract those the signals from near-field emissions and coupling, and then also from far-field antennas. And finally, timing. Timing is also a very common or a very popular type of side channel attacks where based on the timing, based on the time that is consumed in a certain operation, you can actually try to detect what operation has happened, and based on that you can actually detect what are the bits of the keys. And the example that I mentioned before on the RSA CRT example actually can also be done through a timing attack on the system. So typical targets, maybe a lot, many of you would think, okay, how practical those attacks are in practice. And we've seen that they are quite common, more common than you would imagine. So most common targets are, of course, the smart cards, microcontrollers or FPGAs-based implementation, and then custom processors or ASICs. Other common targets as well today that you have a lot of applications on the mobile phones that have lots of crypto operations there, so smartphones are a target. Any embedded devices, sensors, IoT devices are also a target. USBs, consoles, etc. And other modern targets today, and these are things that we are looking for in dark matter labs today, is we are looking at a bit of unconventional way of doing side channel attacks, which is one is look at the charging pattern of a device. So if I have a device that has a crypto application there and then a device that is not running any sort of crypto applications, how does the power charging pattern change between one and the other? This is something that is in the making. We're looking at that, but then we're getting also positive results of leakage there. And then the second one is when you have systems that have these different software, hardware, co-design components, and all these interactions between how crypto is being done in hardware and then handed off over a software, there are many leakage interfaces that are there that can be leveraged by side channel attacks, be it the simple form of side channel attacks or the differential form of side channel attacks. Now, countermeasures. Countermeasures, the most common countermeasures are implemented today at the algorithm level. So one of the most common countermeasures is introducing randomness in how the algorithm is being implemented. Masking, blinding are an example, and basically this is to reduce the amount of sigma or correlation between the output data that is being observed and also between the interim states of a crypto algorithm being run. For example, one of the examples I can give here is how side channel attacks can happen against the AES algorithm. We all know that the last round of AES skips mixed columns. So by seeing the output of AES, which is the ciphertext, and then by doing the correlation on the Hamming distance between the ciphertext and the interim state that is being observed, the last round key can be gotten, and then based on that, basically we can retract in order to get the whole key from the that is being fed into the cipher. The second one also is a very common countermeasure, which is constant time implementation. So basically, in the previous example, so I can make the multiplication through introducing NOP or through introducing random instructions. I can make a double, and I can make a basically a squaring to be equal to a multiplication, a multiply and square to be equal to a multiply only by introducing random instructions, and then basically having a constant time implementations all across. Noise-based countermeasures basically are also adapted, and they lead to a reduced SNR factor. Also, two areas that we're looking at in our labs is how to decrease the dependencies on branching into the algorithms and increase more the reliance on Boolean operations. And for example, Ketchak, to use Ketchak is one of those examples. And then the second one, which looks more promising, is that when I have a certain algorithm, and especially if I'm using it multiple times during an implementation, how do I randomize the structures or the building blocks of a cipher? So for example, the first round I can use one type of S-box, the second round I can use another type of S-box, so that the attacker doesn't have the minimum level of leakage that is required in order to attack a crypto system. Now this is at the algorithm level. There are other countermeasures today that also occur at the protocol and the architecture level. So let me jump into the protocol level, and then introduce what could be countermeasures at the protocol level, and then on the other side of the slide, or introduce other areas of leakage or other types of side channel attacks that can occur. So obviously, protocol level countermeasures, they have the same purpose as the algorithm level countermeasures, which is to reduce the amount of leakage that is there so that the attacker doesn't have the minimum level of leakage that is required to recover the key using SPA, DPA, EM, and other side channel attacks. So one of the countermeasures obviously is key agility. So basically, every time I am in a call, in a voice session, I exchange a new key, so that the amount of plain text, ciphertext that is produced based on a certain key is not enough for the attacker to extract the key based on that. Multi-layered security, which is basically using two different protocols at two different layers of the algorithm implementation. So if I have my protocol will have one layer of security that is based on, for example, on NIST Suite B or any publicly known crypto systems, and then I introduce another layer of security which will be processed through this well-known crypto system. Increase overall bit level of security, of course, so then basically use bigger keys so that, you know, the efforts in order to recover the key will be bigger. Reduce redundant crypto operations, and then obviously at the end, which is related to all the above, a smart choice of the crypto system. Now, this is also to mitigate the typical ways that side channel attacks are being done or are being executed. However, when we talk today about protocols, especially with the different components that play a role in a secure protocol, the endpoint, the server, there are other types of leakage that needs to be studied in order to make sure that no external leakage sources are there. So today, if we think of a protocol as a repetition of rounds, and then as a repetition of algorithms, and then we see this combinatorics between the rounds and the algorithms, the leakages on these different rounds and the repetition of these different rounds with the algorithms need to be studied in order to make sure that no sources of leakage are there. then the, all the leakage that is being introduced through authentication system, as I mentioned, the number of players in a modern protocol implementation is a lot. So we have the end device, we have the server, we have different components. So this authentication that needs to happen every time those components talk to each other, the also leakage has to be studied in there. Key agility, of course, it addresses the problem of not having the same operations happening on the same keys. However, the structure or the key structure that ends up being produced on a system based on the master key and then ephemeral keys and then based on those ephemeral keys to extract symmetric keys all the time per session, per call, per message. Also, how would this key structure, what is the leakage that is being created based on the internal state and the memory that is created there? And then finally, in most of the implementation, there is multi-threaded crypto that is going there, and this is also another source of leakage on the system. Finally, the countermeasures could also be done at an architectural level. So the same purpose is to reduce the amount of leakage so that the attacker doesn't have this minimum level of this minimum level that is needed in order to recover the key. So the countermeasures, they could be a circuit level modifications, for example, to use NAND gates that are not sensitive to the power consumption, and then they don't leak information about power and then consumed if the data is different and then if the operation is different. Chip-level partitioning, we see this practice a lot today where there is a chip-level partitioning where the plain text is being stored somewhere, the interim state of crypto operations is being stored in a different partition of the board, and then the ciphertext will be split in another partition of the board in order to separate the different components and the different sources of leakage in a system. And then obviously the last one, which is very well adopted today, which is tamper-proofing, like tamper-proofing a system and adding physical security measures on it. So I'm not saying that the right-hand side basically will create leakage that can be that can be leveraged by attackers. However, these are areas that need to be studied given the new design and then the new architectures of systems that are being introduced today. So today we have most of the hardening of systems. For example, they introduce crypto cards, they introduce CPM, trusted platform module integration on the system where crypto operations will be divided between the hardware and then they will be divided between the software as well. And then there is this handover of session keys or derived keys based on a master key from the hardware into the software. So how does this create internal leakage into the system? And similar to what I mentioned before is how is the leakage in a uniprocessor system that we, as we know it today, mitigated or actually increased when we go into a multi-threaded or a multiprocessor implementation?
How long do I still have?
You have
5 minutes. Okay. So finally, the last slide is really a recap of all the messages I passed across before is, I go back to the aggregation across the whole system, not only the crypto implementation. So the right balance to design a secure communication system today, implemented and make sure and actually ensure that a provable security level of it is one, to properly define the crypto system and ensure that all the countermeasures at an algorithm level, at a protocol level and an architecture level are introduced. The second important point is how do I define the root of trust of my system? So is my root of trust of the system based on at the hardware level? Is it like the TE level? Is it on a software level? So how I define this root of trust? Based on this root of trust, what are the attack vectors on my system and how is routing this trust of my system into the different components mitigate against the attack vectors? The third one is to ensure that we have built-in countermeasures within the code itself. So one, the code has to be vulnerability-free, et cetera, all the secure coding that we as we know it, but second, also it has to be cryptographically secure. And finally, at the design level of a system, all the layers have to be hardened, be it the hardware, be it the operating system, be it the kernel, and then finally the application layer and the communication layer. And with this, I think that's it from my side. So I'll open the floor for questions if you have any. Yes.
You mentioned smartphones. Wouldn't you say that the bigger challenges are, one of the bigger challenges is limited access to a proprietary environment? And I'll give you a perfect example, like Apple. Very little information will run in the back end, very little, instances where you can make use of certain critical hardware that they have available.
Yes.
And so even their APIs are kind of obfuscated. You tell them you do this, but you don't really know what's happening in the back end. So you really have to have this kind of trust mechanism to tell you, oh yeah, they're going to do it the right way, but that's basically it. You don't have anything else to go on.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, in closed environment like iOS, basically you have to take it for, you know, that they have enclave, and then this is the best trusted execution environment that you can have, and then basically you're kind of bound in order to use this as the root of trust for your environment. So you do the best as you can at the user level and your application layer, and then you put all the necessary hooks there, but then, yes, like you are restricted with the environment and then the openness of the operating system that you are working on.
Just to follow up on that, do you think PE is the right answer to something like this? Like some smartphones start to implement the custom execution environment to ensure that the whole ecosystem is actually secure throughout?
I mean, TEE plus the process of secure boot that I mentioned before is a good way in order to start protecting of a system like bottom up, yes. Yes. Yes, it's actually two different things. So the power consumption, basically, let's say I have an application which is implementing AES. So I am what I'm doing is I am going into, let's say it's implemented on an FPGA. I'm extracting traces with my probe on that FPGA to detect the signals that are coming from this AES computation. So let's say I have Xbox that on that round. So I take the power trace or the power signal that corresponding to this operation. The charging is different. The charging is regardless of the crypto operation that is happening, but I know that there is, for example, I'm working on a tunnel or there is a crypto operation that is happening on the background. So what are the charging pattern from the battery charging pattern of my device? So they're two different things. It will not allow you to extract the key. It will give you information about the different crypto algorithms that are happening. So it's basically an extra pointer that you have in order to dig deeper into the components of the system. Yes. So it actually, so on the power analysis, let's say you have an obscure chip, you don't know which algorithm is there. Like you could tell from the signal waveform. For example, you would know that if you have, for example, 14 rounds of something that looks like an AES execution, your assumption would be that it's an AES. So you would collect as many traces as you want in order to remove this sigma of uncertainty, but this is exactly it. So you would, like CRT, for example, if you have an RSA with a CRT implementation, you would know that it's actually RSA and using CRT implementation. Yes?
In one of the previous slides, where you want, I think, slide 4 or 5, there were two devices authenticating to the server.
Here? Yes. Yes, so the end-to-end security is basically the data that is being encrypted with the AES key. It is sent from user 1 to user 2. So the data encryption is from user 1 to user 2. But in order for you to authenticate yourself, you could either authenticate yourself to your server at the end to say, okay, I am a legitimate user of this application, and then I'm creating the key and then sending it to another user of this application. So you authenticate yourself to the server and you authenticate yourself to the other user as well.
Is the server involved in establishing the key?
It could, in this case, in this particular scenario, it is a, it's not. So I'm using it as a third party or as a CA in this case. But in another implementation, it could be that servers are used as a as an additional layer of assurance of the establishment of the key. This is just an example that I used. But in this case, it's just being used as a trusted CA, basically the third party for validation of the certificate. Yes, of course. I mean, in most of these cases, you would need physical access to the smart card, to the mobile device, or to the FPGA. So you would need physical access to this, unless you have. And to be honest, I don't have like much experience in this. But unless you have like an antenna and a far field interception, but I wouldn't comment on that. But in most of the experiments that we do, you would need physical access, and you would need the right probes in order to get the signals from the device. Yes. Yes.
Do you
mean like actual attacks?
Yeah.
Yes.
So most of the major attacks we use today
Yes. Yes. Yes, so for example, you would look into, even though it's an old one, like Intel and I was broken in this way. Smart cards, especially smart cards and FPGA-based implementation, they are also like subject to this sort of attacks, and even on commercial systems, this have been noted for sure. So far, I mean, this hasn't been the case. But you know, after the most common type of attack that you have today, the second part is for the attack sophistication to get into this level of attacks. But I can tell you out of experience that, for example, processors like Intel and I and others, and then some smart card implementations of ECC, RSA, and AES, they can be broken with such attacks. Some attacks and some implementation, they will have some sort of countermeasures. So this is where you have to move in the sophistication level from having a simple power attack to a differential or to a correlative power attack. But then eventually, if you have the right amount of traces and you know how to use your signal processing knowledge well, you know how to basically pass those signals to your low pass, high pass, etc., and then narrow down the issue, these attacks are for real, and then they can leak the secrets from your platform. Yes.
I'm sorry, that bugs you. If it's a quick question, I can let one more.
Quick question on that. This type of attack is always scoped to a single device because it requires either access to hardware or hardware.
Yes.
So it's never going to be a broad type of attack like you go to Markley where you can attack.
No, it's not it's not like an infection on the devices. Basically, it's a type model, right? So if, for example, you have multiple cards, this attack will be on that specific card. But if you do it on one, it will become much easier. If you have other cards other smart cards, it will become much easier to leak secrets from the others, because you would have done all your signal processing. You would actually, one of the important things is to locate where the leakage is on the chip. So once you locate it on one, it will become much easier to do it on the subsequent ones. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
No more questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was a very interesting keynote on practical attacks. Dr. Araj is available to us all 3 days, so you can ask her. And just a reminder that all these tracks sessions are available, going to be available at the end of the conference. It's going to be just audio available, but they are going to be available to you in case you want to listen in again. And you can always contact the speakers. So we're going to have the next speaker. I don't know who it is. So. Oh, that's here. All right, thank you.
I say your name? Haiti? Haiti Leo?
Yes.
Haiti?
Yeah.
No, you can join me for the next one. And pick up to the lunch session.
Thank you. Eight.